show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, it's another, we'll call it mild week in terms of Royals news. Not a whole lot there, but we're still here. It's always fun to talk about the Royals, regardless of how much big stuff is going on. Before we get into that, I'm Jeff Herr, and with me is the never mild but always caliente Michael. You like that? That was I switched languages on you.
That was weird.
Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this also unmild evening? At least here, it's been rather chilly the last couple days.
Yeah,
I don't like it.
I don't like it either.
March is always that crapper get off the pot month, it seems, where it's like, oh, hey, it's 80 degrees. I've got my shorts and I'm, you know, going to the park with my daughter and this is awesome. And then the next day I've got my winter pea coat out again because it's freaking 22 degrees and I got to run the faucets so my pipes don't freeze.
Yeah.
Make up your mind. Let's get this over with, winter.
Are you going to have one last? Or not?
Exactly. If you're going to have one last hurrah, that's totally fine. But get it done. Get it over with. So
yeah.
Anyway.
Not a fan.
No, nor am I. But now that we've got that decided, let's talk about. So the big news from this week is the amount of air that was lost in Kansas City from the collective breath-holding of the entire Royals nation as we saw Team Italy versus Team Venezuela in the World Baseball Classic, and none other than the hair flip master himself, Drew Butera, barreling in with no regard for any sort of decorum or health, complete disregard for everything holy in this world, into the knee of Salvador Perez. It was not nearly as bad as I described it.
Yeah.
It was actually quite awkward looking. It looked as though Butera was intended to slide and then kind of stopped at the last minute and did kind of like a semi-somersault roll thing. And then
right. He did Perez, literally the least productive attempt to slide ever.
Like, I got to make it look like I'm doing something here is essentially what he did. And
you can't just Perez, stop, but yeah.
Yeah. And Perez, who was, you know, in position to make the tag, you know, Butera rolled up against his knee, and then he lifted up his foot to, you know, to absorb it so he would move his leg back. And then it looks like when he set his foot down again, it got kind of stuck or caught in the dirt. And then Butera kept rolling and went back on the knee, and he, you know, fell over writhing in pain. And then the reports were that he couldn't put any weight on it. He couldn't walk. He had to be carried back to the locker room, and everyone was just – it was – pandemonium in this city. Salvador Perez, you can argue he's the most valuable player for the Royals. We have been doing, you know, that argument has been present for the last few years. You could argue that he's the most popular Royals player in the city right now. You know, there's lots of things.
Leading vote getter in the All-Star game last year.
Exactly. He's very well known around the league and all that stuff. So, you know, it was quite a shock. You know, we all remember, was it 2013 when he tore his meniscus?
2012.
Was that 2012?
2012, yep. It was right after he signed his extension, his first extension.
Yes, first extension. Tore his meniscus, missed a large portion of the season. So, you know, never good. But the indication is – earlier we heard, you know, they said initial preliminary results, Salvador Perez apparently later that evening after the incident occurred, called Ned Yost and said, hey, I'm feeling great. It's okay. I think we're going to be good. And then I'm paraphrasing. And that's not a direct Salvador Perez quote, just to be clear. And then following that, you know, he got checked out by some doctors. The indication was 95% okay, and the other 5% would be released upon, you know, further MRIs, etc. He got two MRIs. The MRI today was the second one, so it was more of a second or more of an additional MRI than it was a second opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing was identified in the first that they were trying to see if maybe it was just an incorrect reading or something.
Well, and the first one was done by Team Venezuela's doctors, and not to say that they aren't, you know, capable athletic trainers. You want your guys to be doing it.
Yes.
And nobody would blame the Royals for holding out for that before they started to make any determinations. So,
right. Specifically when contracts are involved and things of that nature.
And when it's your catcher, your all-star starting catcher, who you have penciled in for 189 starts in the year.
That's right.
Yep.
Correct.
That is a mathematical number.
That's right. That is in fact a number.
It is.
No denying that fact. So, you know, that was rather interesting. And we finally heard today after the second MRI that everything's clear. He's expected to, every indication, I guess I haven't heard definitively, but I think he's supposed to be ready for the season opener. He shouldn't miss any action, but he'll miss a week or two of what remains of spring training. So there's only a week or two remaining, so he'll, you know, they're going to take it easy for him, which means that he'll be catching a full nine innings and multiple side sessions tomorrow.
Probably, yeah.
So there's that. But when the news broke, Mike, and the GIF, and it is a GIF.
I appreciate you saying that correctly.
So that's, you know, put a pin in that, if you will. But so the GIF comes out, you see the play, you see what happened. It looks eerily similar to things we've seen before that have been not good.
Mm-hmm.
Salvador Perez, all the things we heard right away, the Venezuelan national reporters talking about can't walk, etc., etc. What's running through your head at that very moment when you first heard?
I mean, it seemed like you know, just seeing the play it didn't look good. And, you know, I've watched enough sports over the years that you see that type of injury happen a lot where someone loses control, they roll up, you know, you're planted in the ground and there you go. The knee's got one way to go and it's backwards or to the side or whatever, you know. It looked bad. It looked really bad. And when it was also the left knee, the same knee that tore the meniscus, I mean, obviously that injury is healed, but at the same time, like, you don't want to impact the same knee if you don't have to. You know, I felt kind of anxious about that because Perez is obviously an important player on this team. The Royals are looking to keep that window that one more year, and there aren't a lot of catchers who would be ready to just jump in and fill in for Perez. I mean, 20 home run catcher. He threw out like half the guys that tried to steal on him last year. And he's such a presence on the field with his teammates that is nearly impossible to replace. You know, there might be three guys, you know, like Yadier Molina, Buster Posey. I'd say maybe like Jonathan Lucroy. Seems like the three guys. I mean, there's probably someone I'm overlooking, but those are the first three names I think of who would be in the same type of, like, you know, to command the field in the same way with the also offensive prowess. And, you know, so those would have been a big loss. Now it's kind of a blessing in disguise in a way, because what I read from, I think it was Flanagan or maybe someone else, that there was a little bit of an elbow issue when he fell down. So that, you know, that's what's more going to keep him out than anything. And it might be like a week. But that's a week. You know, he gets a week off When does Sal Perez ever get a week off? It's, you know, it,
right.
Like, he'll get a concussion and really won't take a week off. He should, but he doesn't. They just say it wasn't a concussion. So, yeah, I mean, it was anxious. And the circumstance of it being his own backup, Drew Butera, you know, running into him. One, a lot of people were crazy and saying, oh, my God, how can Butera do that? Well, clearly you see the play. It was not intentional in any way. It was just a fluke accident. It was kind of a weird play because the pitcher was in the way, should have been backing up. A lot of things went wrong. Butera shouldn't have been sent from third anyway. It was just kind of a mess of a play. You know, and frankly, the theory that, oh, he ran into him to get playing time didn't hold water because, shoot, if that would have been the case, if Perez was hurt and was out for a couple months, Derek Norris probably would be on the Royals right now because he just got released. So, guy with starting experience and still kind of a little bit of a reputation. That's probably the guy the Royals would go and get. And so Butera would still be behind it. And Brian Peña is hitting pretty well, too. So there's no guarantee for that. But yeah, I mean, it was a weird play. It was really annoying. You know, I was kind of, you know, a lot of people were upset about it because, again, it was in the World Baseball Classic and it wasn't in spring training. And I was kind of ticked about that too, because, you know, if a guy's going to get hurt, I kind of want him to be, you know, if it's going to happen, I want it to be in his facility with his doctors, with his teammates, with, you know, everybody right there. A lot of people on Twitter were asking me, like, what difference does it make? I'm like, well, I mean, he's still hurt either way, but, you know, it just comes down to, I'd rather Nick Kenny be right there to tend to him than, you know, he has to fly back. You know, they gave him even an extra day to fly back. Then you still got to do another MRI. And it's just, you know, I'd kind of rather it just be right there, right in the spot. And that was my main thought on it. So, you know, they really dodged a bullet here in that, you know, Perez seems, by all accounts, that he's going to be fine, which when you go and rewatch the play now, it's kind of confusing how that can actually be, because it could have been a really, really ugly play.
Yes. And, you know, it's one of those things where, okay, so I talked about it a little bit last week, right? My feelings on the World Baseball Classic, and people were, you know, coming up, not directly to me, but just, you know, I saw on social media and stuff as the games kind of started to pick up a little bit, people were more and more like, hey, this is kind of growing on me, you know, this World Baseball Classic or stuff. And then something like this happened. So,
yeah.
You know, this isn't even, you know, the main reason why I dislike it, you know, but it is something that shows, again, you know, how kind of, and we had this conversation in the BP chat with some of the guys too, when we were talking about the World Baseball Classic, and part of this issue comes back to, you know, it's glorified exhibition, sure. But, you know, they're throwing that in there, and your argument for it, you can say, okay, well, Salvador Perez is going to be out there playing spring training games, going to be doing drills, he's going to be out there playing anyway. So if he's just playing in the World Baseball Classic versus playing at Royal Spring Training, what's the difference, right? Well, the difference comes in this exact scenario of what happened to Perez, where you can say, okay, the World Baseball Classic, you know, you just be playing all the same, but you're kind of having an exhibition spring training like atmosphere, but then you're asking the players themselves to go full speed when it's spring training. In most cases, they wouldn't be. You know, spring training is a very controlled environment, specifically mm-hmm. when you look at like pitching and things like that. You know, you've got pitchers that are working on a particular pitch, they're working on their sequencing, they're doing very specific things that, you know, lend itself to spring training and to the amount of control that you have in those scenarios. But when the games are, you know, truly live, and when they're, and especially when you look at say, you know, Team Italy, right? You know, Drew Butera, he's a guy, he's maybe going to play, what, 25 games in a year, and he might, you know, the majority of those, he'll just play an inning or two because Perez had to get subbed out for some reason, you know, so he's out there probably trying, you know, playing really hard because, like, hey, you know, this is some of the most meaningful baseball I get to play because I don't get to play. You know, this is no slight to Drew
Butera. I don't get to start,
you know,
a lot.
Exactly. There's a lot of players out there like that for those different national teams. So, you know, you've got that versus guys like Salvador Perez, Miguel Cabrera, those kind of players who, you know, they know where they are. You know, they get to play all the time for, you know, in Major League Baseball and the real meaningful games and that kind of a thing. So they know, you know, they're just out there kind of for fun. So you've kind of got this competing aspect with some of the players, even, it feels like. And, you know, as I was really kind of running down this whole thing, trying to distill exactly what it was that kind of turned me off about it, I think one of the biggest things too is, so the World Cup for soccer, right? I love the World Cup. It's great. And there is a strong sense of, like, national pride that comes with rooting for your team. We talked about that before. But, and it, you know, I don't think I crystallized exactly last week why that, you know, you're missing that feeling. But, like, okay, with the World Cup for soccer, you've got, you know, all these countries, and they're for years ahead of time, they're playing matches, right? To, they've got a point system devised, you know, essentially.
You got qualifiers, you've got.
Yeah, like after
national teams that are regularly convened.
Right. So essentially a year after the previous World Cup is over, then you kind of start up the process all over again, and you start doing all the qualifier stuff. You meet together as a team periodically and practice together and that kind of a thing. So
have friendlies.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and so if there was a, if this was like a legitimate thing and you had to qualify for, right now it just appears any team or any country that has,
they do have qualifiers, but a lot of teams carry over from previous years too. So,
see, I didn't even realize that. So maybe that's a little bit different. But like nobody,
it's not nearly the same scope.
Yeah, and nobody, you know, Salvador Perez isn't missing a game in July to go play for a World Baseball Classic qualifier for Venezuela, right? Whereas, you know, Graham Zusi for Sporting Kansas City, he will miss a game in July for Sporting KC to go play for the U.S. national team, right? And, you know, that's something that the MLS deals with and something that, you know, makes it like, okay, this is so meaningful that a player will leave the team that's paying him and go play for his country, you know? So that's kind of just one microcosm of a lot of the importance and the nationalism and all that kind of stuff that gets lost from the World Baseball Classic for me. So I don't know. I'm kind of rambling here about it, but it's just, it's seeing what happened to Salvi just kind of brings it all to the forefront. And I was thinking about it a lot more this week and why I dislike, cause there have also some people that have just been like, oh man, I can't believe you don't like it. You know, I think it's fun and it's great and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
had to get that out there.
Like if they didn't continue to do the WBC, that I wouldn't mind one bit, not at all. That being said, watching the games, they've been really entertaining baseball games. I mean, there's been a lot of comebacks. There's been big moments, big hits. But at the same time, I don't care who wins. I don't care if Team USA wins. It'd be great if they did. But I, you know, I'm not going to feel any better or worse if they win or lose. It's just whatever. So, you know, that's why I'm not going to get behind it. But if it's on, you know, last week I said, I probably won't watch much. Yeah, I was wrong. I started to watch just because games were on and, you know, this game would end and then the next one would be a lot of fun. And then, you know, oh, there's another one. And so, you know, I did get kind of caught up in that, and I'll probably continue to watch it through the next, you know, through the duration of the tournament. But at the same time, it's like, you know, whoever wins doesn't move the needle for me. Whoever, you know, if USA gets shut out their next couple games, I'm not going to feel terrible. It's not going to be that big of a deal. So, yeah, when it comes down to it, big picture, yeah, you're just kind of putting guys in, you know, just overexposing them to potential injuries. Perez was playing in the ninth inning of that game when that injury happened. You know, he might play three times into the ninth inning in spring training, and maybe not even that, just because the Royals know what they have in him. They know he's going to be ready to do it. They don't need to really see him in the ninth inning in a spring training game because, you know, why? They know what he's about. They know that he can do it. So it's not a situation he would normally be in. And so that's kind of where it falls for me of, you know, yes, it's entertaining baseball and the crowds are pretty lively, especially when you get like, you know, some of the Venezuela and Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico, like those are some lively and fun crowds and the games are fun and the players are fun because they're theatrics and all that stuff. You know, just like last night, Javi Baez tags out Nelson Cruz, doesn't even look at him when he tags him. He's just pointing at the catcher. Like, that's fun. I think that's fun, but that's not enough of a trade-off to be like, okay, we have to do this or we have to expand this. You know, it's like if they don't do it in 4 years, they're going to do it in 4 years because attendance and ratings are good. But if they didn't, wouldn't bother me.
Yeah. So I think we've spent more time on the World Baseball Classic than it actually deserves, whether you like it or not. Just yeah. its relevance in the sports world is small. Especially compared to, you know, for Royals fans, probably what's even more relevant is what's going on in spring training. Right. We've kind of talked, you know, we've talked about, you know, quite a bit of the things going on, the different competitions, some of the notable things. So, you know, as it goes, storylines change, you know, different players step up, some kind of fade away. So a couple of ones that, you know, we had kind of talked about Peter O'Brien, previously, and how he started off as his legend grew and then it shrank, and it's now kind of maybe about where you would think it would be. But some of the other kind of surprises that have risen to the forefront specifically today, we can talk about Raul Adalberto Mondesi, not to be confused with Raul Mondesi Jr., both of whom are sons of Raul Mondesi. So that's all very easily
George Foreman
discernible.
And Rougned Odor situation here.
Yes. Wait, is Rougned Odor, is that his father's name as well?
I don't know if it is, but I know that Rougned Odor has a brother named Rougned Odor.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
It's like that's Rougned Ramon Odor or something like that, and Rougned Javier Odor. I don't know what their middle names are. I looked it up the other day just to make sure I wasn't imagining it. But yeah, it's I mean, that's the case.
Little slightly unrelated trivia on first names. Okay, I just learned this, so I'm gonna share it with you.
Rougned right. Jose Rougned Roberto Odor and his younger brother Rougned Jose Odor. And okay. they're both gotcha. Rangers prospects too, so they're both in the Rangers organization. So
look at that.
That's simple, and they're both middle infielders.
Yes. God, I hope they play together at some point. but
I just,
a little bit of
I just keep thinking of Hodor from
Hodor.
Hodor. Yes.
Hodor, like Brockholt for the Red Sox. I can't think of anything but Arrested Development.
Right.
Steve Holt. Yes. but a little bit of first name trivia. So I learned the other day. So the Muhammad is the most common first name in the world, right? So the reason that is because many Islamic Muslim people name their sons Muhammad out of respect for Muhammad the Prophet, right? So, like M. Night Shyamalan, the director, the M stands for Muhammad.
Oh, okay.
But most of them go by their middle name. Yeah, most of them go by their middle name because the M is so common.
Sure.
So I had a guy I worked with from Sri Lanka in college, and his name was M. Comer. And so his I was like, what does the M stand for? And that's what he said. And I was like, why don't you go by Muhammad? He's like, everybody's named Muhammad. So but then I find out the other day that this was so prominent in the 1980s in Egypt. They actually outlawed the use of the name. I don't know if outlaw is the right word, but they either outlawed or discouraged the use of the name Muhammad because it was so prevalent. It got very difficult for them to keep records straight of all the kids that were being born in that country because they all had the same first name.
Huh.
And actually, another common first name used is Hussein as well, which is actually Muhammad's son. So there was a similar, but to a lesser degree, problem that they had in the 80s with that as well. So,
huh.
Talking about people with the same first name.
The multiple Rauls and Rugneds.
Yes. So, fun fact for the day. There you go. It's not all royals on this show, folks. There's your proof.
Well, they knew that anyway.
That's true. That's very true. But anyway, back to the Raul at hand.
Back to that Raul. The torpedo boat, as I used to call him a long time ago, and it never stuck. And I'm so disappointed that it didn't.
Because that came from a translation of an article that talked about the Royal signing him, right?
Yeah, it was the day they signed him.
That was the translation of the name Adalberto, isn't it?
The original article was on ESPN Deportes, and it called him a toreador, which is like a baseball player, or maybe it's directly to shortstop or contextually a translation of shortstop. But I threw it into like Google Translate because I don't speak Spanish. I can kind of recognize a little bit, but I you know, I wanted actual, you know, details when I was reading it, and it translated toreador to torpedo boat, and so I was like, that's hilarious.
I remember thinking that was awesome,
and I mean, you know, at the time he's a little guy, 16, and super fast and everything, so it kind of fit, and then it never stuck. So
it never took off.
It never launched.
Many torpedo boats that are made, it never left the marina.
So I also wonder why that would be the first translation you would go to, but whatever, you know. But yeah,
whatever. So anyway, torpedo boat himself had quite the day today. He had a home run that was – I haven't seen video of it, but from those that have, that it was a very, very well-hit ball, very, very forceful home run. And Mondesi has, as of late, been coming on rather nicely. You know, he's been playing rather well in spring training. He's been hitting. You know, he walked today as well, which if you remember seeing him last year,
one to walk usually.
No. He's very much in that Salvador Perez, Alcides Escobar mold of, you know, free swingers, as they say, which is the polite way of saying bad at pitch recognition.
C-ball swing.
Yes, exactly.
Not even hit ball, just swing.
Sometimes it leads to guys like Salvador Perez who are good, you know, quote, bad ball hitters and can actually make contact where most people maybe not be able to.
Right, wild card game.
Exactly. But the majority of the time, it just leads to players with, like Alcides Escobar, with sub-300 on base percentages.
Yeah.
Regardless, Mondesi, home run today, walk today, been playing better lately. It seems as though he may actually be – we talked about it later, that the second base battle and how Colon we both thought was probably the guy. But – I don't know. It seems like maybe the vibe is kind of leaning towards Mondesi now as possibly coming out. And we both said if that was the case, that's a good thing because it means he went up and grabbed it. You know, he performed well enough that they just couldn't say no. But, you know, when you hear these things and you see the tide, if you will, shifting to more towards Mondesi possibly for a second base role, I mean, how do you feel about that scenario?
Well, I mean, just kind of looking at it, like last year, he He got 11 hits last year. He's already got more hits than that now. The strikeouts, he struck out only 6 times in 27 at-bats. So that was one of the big things last year, was that he swung at so much, and so much of the time it was just junk down and away, stuff he, you know, had no business swinging at. I haven't been able to see as many at-bats just because not as many games have been on TV, so it's, you know, it's difficult to actually see what he's swinging at sometimes. Spring training is difficult like that when you're not in Arizona. But from the sounds of it, it sounds like he's doing a better job of picking out pitches to go after. And when he's getting them, he's hitting them hard. So he's got 2 homers and 2 doubles this spring. He's hitting .444. You know, everything else is there. And when it comes down to the second base competition, you know, Whit Merrifield's not doing a lot. Christian Colon's done a couple things. Chesler Cuthbert's done a little bit, and actually played a lot more at second this spring than I thought he would. So, you know, when it comes down to those 4 guys, Mondesi is the one playing the best right now. And I think the Royals were probably looking for something like that, like some excuse to make him the opening day starter. And if he continues doing this for the next couple weeks of spring training, that's exactly what's going to happen. I mean, they've got no reason to not do it. They've already brought him up once. You know, I don't think that they, you know, I don't think they're too concerned with the idea of like service time, because I think once he's ready, he'll just be ready, and they'll deal with all of that later. It's not like they're going to game his service time like Chris Bryant or like Eric Hosmer back when he was ready to debut.
Yeah, they're not in a position where they can afford to do that anymore.
Yeah, if he's the guy who's playing best, they just need to go with it. And, you know, then it comes down to, well, will it stick? Will, you know, is he doing well now because it's spring training and he's seeing more fastballs and he's seeing guys just focusing on getting the ball in the zone? Or is it going to be something where the book is out on him, but he adjusts and has learned something and is going to take that into the regular season? So when guys are more actively, you know, not that they're not trying to get him out, but, you know, I think if you send a guy out there on the mound and you say, hey, I just want you to work on this third pitch of yours and don't use your main secondary pitch, you know, that's going to change how the batters are able to perform against him. And, you know, if Mondesi is taking advantage of that, that's different than when he's got a pitcher with his full array of pitches ready in the first week and can really just go to it. So I don't know. I mean, it will have to stick, but at the same time, nobody else is out playing him for it. You know, I think Colon has done some good things. Merrifield's been pretty quiet. Cuthbert's done a lot. And so when it comes down to it, you know, I don't think Cuthbert's got any inside edge. He probably would have to be mashing like Peter O'Brien to really put the Royals in a position to even look at him in a position like second base, because it's just not his natural position. It's not one he has a lot of experience in. Colon, kind of similar, would have to just be hitting a lot. Merrifield, I think they really like the flexibility, but he still has to perform too. I mean, he got sent down last year so that Mondesi could come up, and there were problems with Merrifield too. So none of these guys is the perfect candidate, but the guy who's most likely to have the most tools to carry it through the season is Mondesi. And right now, it's like you said, he's grabbing it. So if he can keep this up and doesn't get into bad habits and doesn't start trying to overswing or do too much, yeah, he's got a really good shot to get that opening day job. I mean, I guess there's still time for any of the other guys to jump up, and if Mondesi slips, they can take advantage. But, you know, the Royals have already, you know, kind of optioned him around, so it's not like they're worried about that. They can send Whit Merrifield down, so that would open up a spot for him. It may be best that he's playing in Omaha every day so that he can kind of work his way up, but, you know, if he's hitting .400 at the end of spring training, what else does he need to show the Royals? And I think that's what they would cite when they name him the starter. So it's exciting. I'm skeptical that he's going to be able to continue it once the regular season starts, but he probably can't have worse pitch recognition than last year in his stint in the big leagues, because it was pretty poor. He swung at everything, and he didn't make contact on a lot of it. So, you know, he's got a lot of improvement to do, but he's got a lot of potential to improve. So if this is the start of that process, then the Royals may be in good shape, because Dave Lesky tweeted earlier, you know, the talent is there. If he ends up, you know, being ready and like really ready, capital R ready, he might be the best player on the team. You know, it might be that quick of a transition. If he's not ready, we'll probably know it right away. And the Royals, I don't think in the first 3 months of the season are going to hesitate to make a change if they have the option to do so. And if Merrifield starts in the minor leagues, that's probably the guy that they would switch out, you know, to give Mondesi that opportunity to continue to grow at AAA while they can try to continue to win at the big league level and see if they can keep the window open a little longer. So, you know, the next couple of weeks are going to be telling on how that turns out. And I hope Mondesi keeps hitting. I hope he does it all year. But I'm not 100% sure that he will, just because we've seen so many bad habits at this point.
Yeah. And it's for that reason that regardless of how well he's been doing, you know, I think that the Royals should – I think the correct decision is to start him in AAA, because it's so hard to tell, especially with in a situation like, okay, Mondesi played, had a good amount of time, you know, was 100 and you know, some odd at bats last year in the majors, and, you know, didn't do very well, but maybe he took that, digested it, learned from it, and now it's translating into, you know, the good spring training. Because sometimes that kind of a thing can happen. You do something, you fail at it, you take a step back, and then you realize, okay, well, I know what to do. I know I'm capable. You know, I just need to change this up, and then it's all good to go. And it's certainly possible, but the higher likelihood is that it's spring training, and we've seen spring training stars emerge before that have then failed at the major league level, and, you know, there's certain reasons for that. So it doesn't hurt anything at this point, because, I mean, what's your risk here if you start Mondesi at AAA? Okay, your risk is that he comes out of the gate and he is a Manny Machado like superstar that just starts tearing it up, right?
Yeah.
So that's, you're missing that. Now, if he does that at the major league level, he's going to do that in AAA. So you're going to move him up, similar to Hosmer. He's going to be up after a month anyway. So you're losing a month of really good production at the best possible absolute 100% amazing case scenario.
Yeah.
The other risk, which is the bad risk, is where Mondesi starts, fails miserably like he did last year, and then now, you know, then you have to send him back down for cause, and his confidence is shot. He starts questioning, and, you know, obviously that's all something that it's hard to kind of measure, that type of a thing, but, you know, it's certainly a reality, and it's happened before with players. So, you know, your best bet is because the most likely scenario is Raul Mondesi is somewhere in between, of course, you know, does okay, shows some flashes, struggles a little bit as well. So, and maybe a lot of it, who knows? So starting him at AAA and playing someone like Colon or Merrifield, who may struggle themselves, you're not losing a ton, though. You know, the gap between those players and what Mondesi would give you in the most likely scenario is going to be pretty small. So give Mondesi a little bit more time.
Especially
with
in just a month.
Exactly. With less pressure on him, and then he can, you know, kind of develop a little bit. And if he's tearing the cover off the ball for a month in AAA and you've got no choice but to bring him up, fantastic. But, you know, if he has to adjust and reacclimate himself to pitchers who are actually trying to get him out instead of working on something themselves, then you give him time and space to do that, where it doesn't have as much of an impact of a possibility of losing the Royals a baseball game that in April that could come back to bite them come September when they're looking for the playoffs. So, you know, not to say that Cologne or Merrifield wouldn't struggle as well, but you know, you're not looking to them in the same way you're looking for Montesi. So that's my two cents on it. I feel like it's the Royals, and they've batted Alcides Escobar leadoff for years.
Just because it happened to do things.
Yeah, because in their mind, they think he should be a leadoff hitter, and there were a couple times where it worked out really well, and so they just keep doing it. You know, so they think Raul Mondesi should be a major league player. They think he should be ready, and if they think that, then they're going to kind of make it so. Yeah. We've seen the Royals do that before.
By God.
Exactly. We've seen the Royals do that before, unfortunate as it may be. So, you know, who knows? We'll see what they do with Mondesi. Hopefully they give him a little bit more time, but he may just be starting. Some other names, Jorge Bonifacio.
Yeah.
Has started to pick up late as well. And, you know, I pulled up his statistics. I did not realize he had as good of a year last year as he did in AAA.
I think it's easy to miss that because he had a pretty weak 2015. And yeah, so you kind of get into that same zone where you're like, okay, yeah, we've heard about Bonifacio for years and years. He's in that same boat as Cuthbert and Bubba Starling and now Kyle Zimmer, where it's like, okay, yeah, fine. Call me when they actually do something. And, you know, now he's kind of started to do something.
Yeah, he had, you know, because it was 2013. I think people were starting to get really excited about it. He had a really good – was having a really good season and was kind of reemerging as, you know, a player to watch for in the system. And then he had a hand injury, a broken – I can't remember exactly what he broke in his hand.
I think it was in the Hammett bone or something, maybe.
I wanted to say Hammett, but I know that's the – it happens to a lot of players. I didn't know if that was the exact one or not, but regardless
– I believe it was. I don't recall completely, but I mean –
it was essentially the worst possible hand injury you could have for a hitter.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those things where even when you're healthy enough to play and you're not going to make it worse and it's healed, you know, the strength takes a really long time to come back. And anytime you're playing in that scenario where you're, you know, you're going to subconsciously, whether you're really trying to or not, if you're not as strong as you used to be in one small aspect of your swing, your body's going to compensate. And so it kind of messes with your swing and you almost have to rebuild it after you fully get back to, you know, not feeling it at all. And so, you know, I think it took him quite a while to recover from that, but last year it seems like he really did. I mean, he had an 812 OPS last year. He had 19 home runs in AAA last year.
Yep. Like 500 at bats.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's pretty impressive for, you know, a guy who's, you know, a semi-touted prospect. And then you look and you say, wait a second. I mean, he's only 23 years old still.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's still a legitimate prospect. And, you know, if he can start the season good, you know, and there was even Clint Scholes even brought up the question to us, you know, are the Royals getting to the point where they might just be better off starting somebody like Bonifacio instead of Jorge Soler? Because Soler has had it in terms of surprises. You can chalk this one up as a negative surprise. Soler has had a putrid spring.
Yeah.
He's not by no account has he hit a well hit ball this spring. He only got one the other day. Did he?
But
okay.
It was notable because it was the first time he'd really tagged a ball. It went to straightaway center. It went up against the fence, you know, about, you know, 2 feet from clearing the fence. But that was kind of it. You know, he's got a bunch of bloops. He has walked quite a lot. He's tied with Chesler Cuthbert, of all people, for the lead in walks with 5. So there's that. But
who is this Royals team?
Yeah. So. Yeah, Peter O'Brien has 4 walks, so there you go. But Soler hasn't hit well. He could be sent to the minors. I doubt that the Royals would do that, but Bonifacio is playing so well right now. And, you know, he's got 6 extra base hits, hit another homer today. So, you know, there's, I don't know where the point is where the Royals say, okay, let's start thinking about this. But, you know, Bonifacio is really doing a really good job in spring to, you know, if he's not, he's probably the first guy they would call up if they needed a hitter. So, I mean, he's at least put himself into that position, which you couldn't say that last year. You know, it sure feels like he should have made his major league debut like 3 years ago, and he still hasn't done it. So that's a pretty significant surprise, because I just, you know, a guy that you almost not quite had written off in Bonifacio, and now he's starting to perform. Again, it's still spring training, so the standard caveat is applicable here too, but you know, he's still doing it. He's still putting the ball over the fence. And when you compare it to how other guys are doing, like Soler, who is a significant pickup this offseason, you know, Wade Davis is a pretty big price to pay for a guy. You know, you might have a guy who's out playing him right now, who was in your system all along. So that would be pretty crappy for the Royals. But if they're really serious about, hey, let's go with the guys who are playing best, and they really, you know, I mean, if Soler's working on something in particular, that might be, you know, that might be significant to why he's struggling. But if it is some situation where, okay, Bonifacio is just out playing him, there's a non-zero chance that Clint's idea might fly. I'm not sure that the Royals would do that. That is a pretty tough decision to make considering the context, but I don't know. It's interesting. Bonifacio is, you know, he's in that neighborhood now. He's catching some attention. So it's definitely surprising, especially when he's somebody who I just kind of, you know, I just kind of passed over. I didn't really think about him.
Yeah. I thought after that injury and how he kind of never really, it seemed like it was taking him a while to recover. I thought, you know, okay, maybe he ends up being a Merrifield type where you can bring him up and he can just kind of play, you know, an outfield position, a couple different positions in a pinch when you needed him to.
Yeah.
But now it actually seems like, okay, he might actually be a legitimate major league player if he continues to play at this level. So hopefully, you know, that's something that we'll see.
Yeah. He started to kind of look like a guy that would get tossed in to sweeten the deal in a trade as like a change of scenery guy. It's like, okay, well, you get Bonifacio too, this, you know, 23-year-old with some upside left, but he's just kind of reached his peak in our organization, and then, you know, probably goes and hits 30 homers for the A's or something some year. So
yes.
So I guess, so, you know, I'd rather he hit 19 in Omaha than 30 for Oakland. So
exactly. So those are kind of the biggest stories. What are some of the other ones that have jumped that might not be as big, but just some names for people to take note of?
A couple pitchers. I mean, it's not really a surprise for this guy, but Matt Strom is doing exactly what he did last year. He's got 8 strikeouts, no walks, and 7.1 innings. Scott Alexander's pitched really well, and that's a guy that, you know, a couple times I was thinking, he's probably going to get designated for assignment when the Royals sign a guy. He wasn't. Ramon Torres, who's second base shortstop, who is also in that boat, and usually the first guy people think of when the Royals acquire somebody, like, that's going to be the guy who gets kicked off the roster. He's playing pretty well, too. And then there's Yender Caramo, who, you know, is starting to get up there, but, you know, Dave Lesky wrote about him in an article the other day about guys who, you know, maybe they're not up now, but they've probably done enough to be one of the first calls when the Royals need to call somebody up. And, you know, Caramo's done that. I mean, and it's only 5.1 innings, but he hasn't walked anybody, and that's kind of typical. You know, he only walked 23 guys in like 140 innings last year. So that's, you know, pretty good walk rate. It doesn't strike a lot of guys out, but he gets a lot of ground balls, you know, 50-55% ground balls, might even be more than that. I'm going off the top of my head. He's pitched well. He's also pitched often, like later in games. Like, I think he's notched a couple of saves. Maybe that means something. Maybe it doesn't. You know, the end of the spring training game, you're probably playing against triple, double-A guys. But they're still putting him in a situation where he has to protect the lead. So maybe that's feeling out how he handles that kind of situation. I wouldn't figure that he would turn into one of those guys who, you know, is a cyborg, but he could be a key guy who could come in if you need a double play. He could be somebody who can just come in and get a couple of innings. You know, maybe on occasion be your seventh inning guy if someone needs a night off or whatever. And, you know, that's not nothing. You know, this is a guy who would be a league minimum guy. And if you can get capable innings as a out of a reliever at the league minimum, there's a lot of value in that. And so that's a guy who's been getting a lot of mentions. Just, I think a little bit, you know, this is not a one-to-one comparison, but a couple of years ago, like, Caramo's a lot older, but, you know, Miguel Almonte kind of jumped out of nowhere and started to get a lot of press a few years ago. So I don't think that it's the same kind of, you know, the same level. But he could certainly be a guy who jumps up and starts to perform to where, you know, the Royals have to put a guy on the DL. He's the first guy they bring up. And, you know, that is a little surprising to me because they went out and signed about 39,000 minor league free agents who had major league experience. And not a lot of those guys are doing a whole lot yet. So
no,
he's a nice bright spot in that kind of context where, you know, you're not getting a ton from those guys you thought might be fighting for, you know, one of those bullpen spots. So that's a name to kind of keep in mind.
When you – just real quick, when you talk about a guy like him, I always go back to the our days when we used to have Jason Parks on before he went to work for it's the Cubs, right?
That he works for. He's with the Cubs.
Before he worked, I remember it was Jason Adam, and more than a couple times he had mentioned how, you know, he profiles like a 4 or 5 type of interview. He's like, there's, you know, there's a lot of value in that. And he was, I think that was what he was always really good at, was showing that, you know, you have these huge major leagues with all these players and all these different teams for a reason. Not everyone's going to be an Eric Hosmer type, you know, predicted superstar, but there's still a lot of value in a lot of these other players. And that's what this, the Caramo, something like that can make me think of.
Yeah. I mean, and when the alternative is, well, you got to go pay $1.25 million on a guy who makes the majors, even as like a big league veteran, but who's on a minor league deal, you know, like, I think Dylan G got $2 million last year. Well, if you can save yourself $1.5 million on a league minimum guy, well, why not? So if those guys step up, they can provide a lot of value for you. And that's like Scott Alexander. He's pitched a lot last year, wasn't terribly effective, but he's been really good this year. And there were a lot of health issues. He apparently has diabetes, like type 1 diabetes. I mean, that was a thing, and he would eat a ton to try to keep weight on, but he kept losing weight because his body was just out of whack because of this condition. And they finally figured it out, and he's got an insulin pump on the mound, and he's pitching well. So that's another guy. As you know, you look at, you know, another arm, left-handed even, you know, so he can provide some value. So those are a couple of guys who have performed really well this spring who I didn't expect really anything from. You know, like I said, Alexander seemed like a dude who, you know, just get designated for assignment to make room for somebody else, but he's holding his own and excelling and really giving himself a chance to, you know, be one of those guys that the Royals rely on to help out with their bullpen depth. I don't know if he'll make the team out of spring training, 'cause he does have options to go back to the minors. And, you know, if the Royals want to rate, you know, keep somebody else, then that's probably one of the guys that they would send down. Plus, he's lefty. They've got a bunch of lefties right now. You know, Travis Wood, Mike Minor, and Matt Strom, and they already have Duffy and Vargas in the rotation. So, you know, there's, do they need another lefty? At some point, Brian Flynn will come back from injury. So, a lot of lefties. But, you know, I don't know if there's space to use him, but he is somebody that I think if they needed to call someone up, he'd get called up, and his spring has really given him that opportunity. So those are kind of the guys that jump out at me, as at least as far as like guys who can probably do something this year. I mean, there's always a couple guys who might get into a random game and they do something, but they're, you know, optioned to double A right away, or they're just in camp for that game to fill out the roster because this guy needs a day off or whatever. So I don't know if there's, you know, a lot of surprising guys beyond that who, you know, really stand to make the roster. But those are the, you know, the two guys who kind of stick out to me the most as far as, you know, spring training performers.
Yeah, I mean, there's reached the point where, you know, you have enough people have had enough time. They've kind of sorted themselves out. So, you know, those are kind of the storylines that have cropped up recently, the ones that might actually have a potential impact. You know, we also talked about, you know, the Peter O'Brien, and I don't really think that's going to be all too relevant, but yeah, you know, it's kind of sums up most of the major stuff from spring training. The last thing that we'll end with doesn't necessarily have to do explicitly with spring training other than the timing, but came out this week. So we had talked a couple weeks ago about Eric Hosmer and kind of the feeling around the organization and some of the whispers and rumors around that he may actually get signed to a long-term deal by the Royals. And we talked about Dayton Moore's track record when those types of rumors actually come out, there's something behind them. You know, it's more than just smoke. There's a little fire there. Well, we said that, and then those things cleared off or cooled off rather quickly. And
yeah,
so there hasn't been much on the Royals Hosmer front. And then things started coming out. excuse me. Things started coming out about how, you know, they were a little bit further away than originally thought, and, you know, deal might not get done, that kind of a thing. And there's always been this artificial deadline of the end of spring training. And then this week, David Glass came out and said that I'm paraphrasing here, but the situation to sign or the ability to sign Eric Hosmer will be very difficult. So, you know, a couple of things amazing about that. First of all, that David Glass, you know, spoke in public. He doesn't speak in public very often about the Royals.
Nope.
Secondly,
financial things.
Exactly. A very pointed comment, not only, as you mentioned, about financial things, but a particular player. You know, if he ever talks about financial stuff, it's usually in the vein of, you know, oh, we have a budget and this is what we're trying to stick to, and we don't know if we're going to be able to spend more. That kind of just the normal stuff you hear every offseason from the Royals. But very rarely does David Glass come out and get involved in any sort of a discussion of any type. You know, and this wasn't antagonistic in nature or anything. I think it was just a simple statement of fact. But it's very interesting that he would actually come out and say that. So it kind of shows you they're laying the groundwork, I think, for the eventual, you know, possible exit of Eric Hosmer. And I think part of you know, the vein of David Glass's comments was about Scott Boris and how, you know, Boris is trying to do what's best for his clients and trying to do, you know, one of the interesting dynamics that I think a lot of people don't necessarily account for when looking at a particular player and their agent and dealing with the team, especially when you're a super agent like Scott Boris and you've got players all over the league that you work for. You know, when you get a big time deal for Eric Hosmer, then that increases the deals for everyone, and specifically for, you know, first baseman, because you're, you know, anytime someone like him, like an Eric Hosmer, would sign, you're kind of setting the market, if you will. So, you know, that's the paradigm that Boris is operating through. You know, it's not just what does my client want? What do the Royals want? Can we make this work? Does my client want to stay in Kansas City? You know, those are all big pieces of it, but those other elements are thrown in and can really influence the situation, sometimes negatively, you know, and in a lot of dealings that Boris has had in the past, you know, so those are some of the things that have, with the Royals specifically, I mean, those are some of the things that have come into play that have caused some friction and have caused some of his clients to leave town. So you know, along with the fact that the Royals just couldn't afford him, of course. But, you know, Boris Boris didn't necessarily help the situation. And, you know, it comes down to a lot, too, where, you know, if you're Scott Boris and you're talking to Eric Hosmer, you're probably telling him the same thing that we're saying, which is, you know, as long as he doesn't crap himself in 2017, and if he has a year like he did last year or you know, the last couple of years, if he has a year similar to that, then somebody is going to pay him the money. Mm-hmm. They're going to overpay. The fans of that town will hate it. You know, I mean,
maybe,
but
yeah.
At that point, who cares? But, you know, I mean, if you look at Hosmer and you say, okay, 7 years, $100 million seems like a reasonable contract. Okay, let's just say that's where you're at. Well, somebody's going to pay him 7 years, $120 million, right? So that's just the way baseball works. Somebody will make that.
Yep.
Somebody will make that contract. And I, not even if I'm Scott Boris, if I'm anybody, I'm take the $20 million, you know. If you're only talking a few million, you know, if it's $100 million versus $105, okay, whatever. You can stay with where you're more comfortable. But if it, I mean, if you're talking larger sums of money like that, please go take that money.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's the world that Scott Boris is coming from, and that's what David Glass is seeing in terms of these negotiations, or probably not even negotiations, but in terms of these discussions that they're having. And so I think that's what led to the comment. So I think, you know, despite our positivity a few weeks ago, we can probably all but lay this to rest, I think, in terms of the prospects of Hosmer coming back to the Royals long term.
Yeah, I think so. And that's kind of like, it's never felt like he was going to be a guy who was going to, you know, stick around. You know, just by, you know, one, Boris being his agent, two, the kind of hype that he had when he debuted. Now when you look at some of the things he's done in the All-Star game last year and the playoffs, the 2 years before that, I mean, he's got a profile. His overall track record is one of inconsistency, where he's had pretty good years and then a pretty bad year and then a pretty good year and then a pretty bad, you know. So it evens out to where he looks pretty average, really. You know, it's tough to really put the mark. I mean, I still find difficulty thinking of what the deal he would get would be. But at the same time, it's kind of like, you know, I don't know that he's – I mean, he hasn't done enough to really justify a mega deal. And he'll still be one of the top free agents in next year's class from the hitters. So it's going to be, you know, the thing with Boris and these negotiations is that, you know, if they take a deal with Kansas City, there's probably either a sense that their market dropped completely out, and just they recognize that, oh no, we're not going to get what we think we're going to get, or, you know, and then that the Royals are, you know, picking up the tab for somebody else, basically, or that, you know, they would have to be giving up whatever the opportunity cost for the other places. So it's just like, you know, they probably want to, I mean, Boris usually wants his guys to test the market. I'm sure Hosmer wants to test the market. I don't see any reason why, if I were a Hosmer, I would be doing the same thing. I would, you know, he's from Miami, and yes, he's been with Kansas City for a long time, but it's not like me, who grew up in Kansas and watched the Royals my whole life. You know, Hosmer was a Yankees fan. So it's not even, you know, it's not that kind of situation. And I would still be like, yeah, probably got to test the market and see what happens, especially when the difference is probably going to be pretty significant on the money side. And so for David Glass to come out and basically confirm that, you know, I think it takes what seemed to be kind of promising for the Royals, or at least something that they wanted to accomplish in keeping Eric Hosmer, whether that's a good idea or not. You know, it's probably not going to happen. They've got 2 weeks to do it, basically, because the Royals generally won't negotiate those things during the season, and I don't think that Hosmer wants to do that either. So if they're not close now, they're probably not going to be close, and so then it's just a matter of, okay, well, let's see how far they go, and if they're out of it in July, then you see what you can get for them, and then if they've still got another run in them in the second half of the season, then you know you hope that Eric Hosmer does some of the things that he's done in 2014 and 2015, like triples off the wall and mad dashes to home and late inning sack flies and yada yada yada, and give you one more shot at a championship. And if not, if the Royals are out of it, then you part ways and you kind of recover what you can for you know whatever his trade market is. So I just don't know. I don't think the Royals are going to sign him. I didn't really feel like they were going to sign him from day one, but it was plenty interesting to read when those reports started coming out right. A couple weeks ago from John Heyman. So and Heyman's a Boris guy, so you know he's connected in that way. He seems to break all the Boris stories for some reason. Go figure.
And you have to wonder, you know, I'm not going to go as far as to say if Hosmer were to leave, it'd be a blessing in disguise type of thing. Because Hosmer's a very good player. But the contract that would be required to sign him would definitely affect the Royals more than some other teams.
Yep.
And if you took away the name Eric Hosmer and you looked statistically at his, like you said, he's basically average at best. And if you were, say you think he's going to sign for $120 million, not outside the realm of possibility. You know, some people are even saying $150 could be what he signs for. Well, say he signs for the $120, if that's what happens, you know, if you took away that name and you said, okay, these numbers here are being paid $120 million for your team, I don't know how happy you'd be. I mean, you're talking about a guy that has a 763 OPS for his career, averages 19 home runs a season. Again, these are all solid things, but you know, for a first baseman, you expect a little bit more than that.
Yeah.
And so it's also interesting from that regard, if they don't strike a deal with the Royals, they meaning Hosmer and Boris, before the season, then you're basically saying, okay, Hosmer says, I'm betting on myself to test the waters, and I'm going to have a good season, and I'm going to warrant the money that I'm going to get paid. Well, you know, Hosmer, more so than many, I think, in that on the cusp of a mega contract, it's more of a risky proposition. So, you know, Boris is typically – he's very, you know, pro-client, pro player first type of an agent, as he should be, but there's also – you know, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush, right? You know, if you have – if Hosmer's got a $100 contract and all he needs is – oh, I'm sorry, $100 million contract
the
from
union
the Royals.
Would object.
Yes. And all he needs to do is sign it versus, okay, well, if you have a good season and if the market's right, then maybe a team will pay you $120 million. You know, if that's what you're fighting against, you know, I don't know. I don't know what to say because then you'd have to basically break it down. What's worst case scenario? You know, you get injured. It's 2014 all over again. You get injured. You have a poor season. You hit nine home runs that year. Yeah. So if that's what happens to Eric Hosmer this year,
it's going to be a tough sell.
Could your worst case scenario, would that dip below what the Royals are offering? If the answer is no, then you have nothing to lose. But if the answer is yes, then it becomes a bit of a different issue. So who knows? We'll see. But as you said, you know, it was definitely very exciting to see all that stuff go down a few weeks ago and wonder what the prospects might be of an Eric Hosmer future. But I don't think they'll re-sign him just like you are. You know, I've allowed my mind to wander a couple times, but through it all, I've never truly thought that Hosmer would actually end up signing and staying here in Kansas City, and you know I don't necessarily blame him. So you know, nothing major news, but that was just kind of an interesting little tidbit that came out, especially with Glass speaking out like he did. So thought it was worth mentioning.
So with that, Glass talking about anything is just always it's like, oh, okay, let's line up the. The pundits.
Exactly.
Basically.
So with that, I think we'll leave you this week. And before we do, of course, be sure to visit our wonderful sponsors. Obviously, BP Kansas City got a lot of stuff going up there. Visit the see some of the great writing that we have on display there. But also visit Kelly's Westport Inn, our fantastic sponsors. This Friday, folks, is in fact St. Patrick's Day. It's on a Friday.
Yeah. So
it's going to be nuts. And the epicenter
of
all St. Patrickness is in Westport. Absolutely. You are correct. First and foremost, be safe. But after that, have fun.
Yeah.
And go to Kelly's because it's going to be crazy there for sure. I live rather close to Westport myself, so I'm certain that they'll probably every once in a while I live close to Westport in the plaza and like the Plaza Art Fair, it'll be so popular that people will actually be parking by my house. So it's pretty crazy. I'm assuming it'll be somewhere close to that for the parade, but yeah, we will see. But absolutely go to Kelly's. If you're going to go out, you're going to go to the parade again. Can't stress it enough. Be safe, please. But once you've made your arrangements on how to be safe, go to Kelly's. Have a good time. Who knows? You may see some familiar faces up there. But don't forget.
Not this Friday for me, but.
You will definitely see familiar faces on April 3rd.
Yes.
At Kelly's, as we will be having opening day watch party there. So do not forget about that. Put it on your calendars.
Put we'll in your time off requests because it is a Monday.
It is a Monday, indeed. I'll be taking a half day myself.
Have a lot of doctor's appointments on that day.
Certainly. So, yeah, visit all our sponsors. We will be back next week, as always. Stick with us. We got a few more weeks of spring training, and then it'll be the season is here before you know it. Hopefully the weather, as we talked about at the top of the show, finally decides whether it wants to be warm or cold. It's supposed to be nicer this weekend. And then the nicer weather always means baseball's around the corner, and it's almost here, folks. Regular season is almost here. So stick with us. We'll get through this together, everyone, as we cruise towards our opening day watch party. We'll be back next week. Until then, thanks for stopping by. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com. Every town has a place where elites gather for witty conversations over trendy cocktails. In Kansas City, that place is definitely not Kelly's Westport Inn. From its humble beginnings at the corner of Westport Road and Pennsylvania Avenue, Kelly's Westport Inn has seen it all. Pioneer wagon trains filled with families heading west, Civil War battles, and Major League Baseball championships. Kelly's is born of history and tradition, and we hope you'll allow us to become part of your history and traditions as well. Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road, Kansas City, Missouri.